comic books, movies, TV, and more. Nerds are everywhere. It's time to assemble! It's Nerds United, a Jittery Monkey podcast. Here's your host, Greg Mahochko.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Nerds United on the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network, episode number 79. So slowly we'll never catch Kevin Hunsberger at my 1-2-3 cents the podcast, but he's almost to 140 now, which is funny because I started this show about a year and a half before he started his show. But I digress. If you go back to episode 78, last episode, I had Jay Peter on. It's on my good friend, and I think he's now the record holder for most guest spots on Nerds United. But we were talking largely about Broderick, and they were kicking off the Kickstarter, which sounds a little redundant, but they started that campaign on June 8th. And congratulations to Jay, and the artist, of course, and the writer on the project, Ron Bryce, because that campaign is funded, and we still have about 8 days, something like that, to go. So joining me now on Nerds United is the writer of Broderick, Mr. Ron Bryce. Ron, welcome to Nerds United, sir.
Thanks for having me, man.
All right, so this is... It kind of was, we talked, you know, and people who've been listening since the beginning know, the first conversation with anybody new to the show is the origin story. So let's start with you. Where are you from? I know you're in Colorado right now, and that's how you've gotten to know Jay over the years, but are you a native Coloradoan? Is that even the right word? Coloradan?
Coloradan?
Is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, whatever it is. Yeah, I was born and raised here. I actually grew up 4 houses down from where Jay was born.
So have you known Jay, like, lifelong?
Yes, sir. I've known Jay since, I believe I met him the day he came home from the hospital, so.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So that means if there's that neighborly, you know, connection, you probably have the unfortunate, you probably know Ty as well.
Oh, yeah. Ty and I have been friends forever, and Jay and, you know, his little brother and then my little brother, we all just kind of glommed together and we're just a little pack of boys running around causing trouble.
By the way, I love Ty. Go Big Red, Ty, if you're listening. And hey, if you're in Lincoln, Nebraska, support Blue Blood Brewing Company. So, and have yourself a nice beer there. Ty's a shareholder or something like that. So you, what town was home there in Colorado?
I grew up in Lafayette, which is about 18 miles outside of Boulder.
Okay. So, again, and I say this being somewhat of a Nebraska fan, but also, you know, a level-headed individual, Boulder's kind of batshit crazy.
It can get kind of nuts up there for sure, but, you know, I spent the better part of a decade doing my undergrad at CU, so I definitely have a little bit of rivalry with Ty, although
so,
he always wins. So,
well, I remember a particular game where he didn't win, but we can save that for Coronation's Five Heart podcast, which you can also hear on the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network, our Nebraska podcast. Lafayette, Colorado. At what age, you know, in your youth, did you kind of discover comics or you know, the nerdy stuff? I mean, if you're close to their age, you're probably also kind of close to my age. So a child of the 80s.
Yes, sir. You know, comics for me didn't really come along until high school. I don't know. Jay was always buying, like, he always collected all the superhero trading cards while we were always collecting the, you know, football and baseball mm-hmm. cards and stuff. And then when I got into high school, Jay was going to a local shop that's closed now called Infinity Comics and Games. And I just wandered over with him during lunch, I think freshman year one day. And, man, it was, you know, I was done after that, just walking in and seeing all the, you know, the comics everywhere and all the stories, and I was just hooked, man. Just, I couldn't get enough of them.
Did you have, I'm trying to figure how to phrase this. Did you have, like, a creative outlet? I mean, were you kind of creatively minded already to, you know, maybe do a little bit of writing or sometimes just put a, you know, pencil to paper and maybe do a little sketching, things like that? Or where was your, I know you said, you know, football cards, trading cards, things like that, but where was, where was your, you know, so often when we're young, you know, especially high school age, you're nerd or you're a jock or, you know, of course I graduated high school in 2000. So there were also the goth kids who, you know, in the JNCO club, you know, but where did you fit in and did you have any type of creative outlet?
You know, mostly what I did was play, you know, Magic the Gathering. That was the big thing for me and kind of, you know, my group of friends. And then I did a lot of short stories, you know, just with the school newspaper and, you know, little contests around here and there for like, hey, you know, we've got this little, you know, 500 word short story contest for $50 or whatever. And I'd enter all those and whatnot. And, you know, it really wasn't until high school with Jay when we started, you know, we actually started this comic character together called Afterburner. And the nerds that we were, we actually made sweatshirts with, you know, the character that Jay had drawn up, like embroidered in color on the front. And just kind of marched around high school with these sweatshirts on and just wrote little stories about him fighting crime and stuff. And, you know, it was all real basic. But, you know, once we were getting out of high school was when we really got serious about it. And that was when we actually published our first comic with an outfit out of Colorado Springs called Panther Comics that sadly isn't around anymore. But, you know, that was our first kind of foray into the world of comic publishing and storytelling.
Tell me about Afterburner. You know, what, just because I'm curious, what, you know, what were his mannerisms? What was his his gear?
Yeah.
You know,
he was like a full on ripoff of the Human Torch, except the only part of him that was on fire was his head.
Okay.
And you know, he had like the full suit on, like a Fantastic Four looking kind of suit with gloves and, you know, boots and the whole lot. And yeah, I don't know. It was just kind of this goof, you know. We had him running around the different, like, cities, you know, here in Colorado and fighting, you know, different, like high school hooligan type of stuff, you know, like kids defacing buildings, and he'd stop them by burning the, you know, the graffiti off the side of the school or something. So, I mean, it was ridiculous, but it was a lot of fun, you know.
How do you stop graffiti? With arson.
With fire. Yeah, exactly.
I imagine you when you say, you know, he was like the Human Torch, except only his head was on fire. I picture like Johnny Storm from the neck down, but Johnny Blaze from the head up.
You got it, man. Yeah, it was. I mean, it was. Yeah, it was bad. I mean, you know, we if it ever would have gone big, which, you know, it wouldn't have. But if it ever would have, we would have got our pants suit on. So, you know.
Yeah, I wonder why Jay never mentioned that.
Yeah, that's why he doesn't mention it, because he's like, oh, God, don't anyone ever look for that. You know, if I have I may still have one of his sketches around, and if I do, I'll send it to you. You
can yes. Tell it up. I want to put it on the Nerds United Facebook page and just surprise him out of nowhere.
Yeah, he would literally strangle me. Like, he would be so mad.
And the good news is you get to spend a lot of time with him this weekend, but we'll talk about that as we go on. Denver Comic Con is this weekend. So you've been working with Jay for some time, and you said that it was kind of Jay who took your creative writing aspect and introduced you to kind of the comic book way of doing things, right? I mean, the freshman year, that walking into the store, and I remember those you know, Marvel cards, you know, for lack of a better term. I have, in fact, I think in my near vicinity, I have a binder of them somewhere. And those were great because, man, those were some fantastic art that was on those cards. And of course you flip the back, then you get all the, I don't want to say stats, but you get, you know, like all the powers. And it was a great way for kids who maybe couldn't, you know, didn't have access to comic books, but if they just wanted to know more about the characters themselves, you know, they have like, oh, well, you know, Rogue has, you know, power stealing abilities, and Jean Grey has you know, her, you know, and it tells a little bit of history and a little bit of the powers and things like that. So,
and they sold them everywhere, which was fantastic. Even our local flea market carried them, and they carried nothing of, you know, geek, you know, no culture, no nothing, but just the cards. They had them, and, you know, so many kids could get their hands on those and get exposed to, you know, such a fantastic thing that is comic books.
And they were white hot for a minute. And, you know, like I've gone to my comic book shop with the binder. I'm like, so anything for these? Or they just laugh. They're like, we got no place for those.
Yeah. It's like, who would buy these? Yeah. Yeah. They're definitely more, you know, for remembrance.
Right. Right. Yeah. I'll hold on to them for 10 years and let my son, you know, look at them and say, Dad, this is weird, man.
Who knows? Maybe they'll even pay for your son's college education because they'll get super valuable all of a sudden. So,
so you're a writer and a comedian.
I am, yeah, on the side.
Right. So tell me a little bit about maybe how you changed your writing to suit the comic medium.
Yeah, so I'm very used to telling the full-on novelization of stories, right? I mean, I actually have published a novel and I'm writing another one, and that's kind of my wheelhouse. But, you know, as far as comic book writing goes, it's really much more difficult because you have to be very visual. You know, you have to think, okay, you know, how is this going to work and how can I let the artist tell part of the story? You know, because you've got your dialogue and you've got your, you know, your narration and everything, but you don't, you know, necessarily have enough to be able to tell people exactly how your character is feeling without having, you know, being able to write to your artist, okay, this is exactly how he's feeling and here's how we're going to show that through these type of shots. And that's what Jay helped me with most. He said, okay, so, you know, let's break down the first page. How many panels are we going to need, you know, because this guy needs to go through these emotions. And each time we have a turning point in the story, even though it's a minor one, we need to have a panel for that, you know? And so having to break that down was honestly really difficult at first, you know, and the more Jay helped me with it, I guess the more comfortable and better I got at it.
And I've heard, you know, other interviews and podcasts, things like that, writers and artists, creative teams, we'll just, you know, use that phrase, creative teams who've worked together for a long, long time, at the beginning they'll start out and the writer will have such detailed instructions of, you know, this is what I want on the splash page, this is how I want, you know, these framed out. But by the time they get to the end of their run, and for whatever reason, Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo are the ones, you know, their Batman run are the ones that come to mind. But, you know, at the end, they don't have, you know, Scott wouldn't have to give as much instruction because, you know, 60 issues, whatever it was, into it, you know, Greg be like, well, I've got an idea of exactly what you want at this point. I'll throw it to you. If you don't like it, send it back, you know, things like that. So having worked with Jay as long as you have, I mean, through the process of Broderick, which obviously we'll get into, were you still laying things out kind of page by page, or were you just saying, this is kind of what I want, but also I trust you?
Right. Yeah. So when we first started out, I used to write, you know, basically, you know, a novel for each panel. And then, you know, as the editing process went on, we really cut a lot. And when I gave him the last four pages for Broderick, for the first issue, it was really bare bones. I mean, you just don't need it, you know. Like, Jay is just so good with, you know, visualizing it in his head and seeing exactly what I'm seeing at the same time, that all I really had to give him was, you know, panel of Broderick doing this in this place kind of thing, you know. And instead of choosing the shot and, you know, the angle and everything else, you know, I got to kind of, you know, distance myself from that and focus more on, okay, how is this panel important to the story, right? How does it move things along? And, you know, is every panel going to be exciting for our readers? And if not, how do I change it so it is?
And at the same time, you know, you're also figuring out dialogue and right, you know, and if it's a climactic scene in a story like Broderick, there may not necessarily have to be as much dialogue, but at the same time, you know, and I'll, of course, listeners, if you're listening to this and you haven't been to the Kickstarter page, first of all, you should have by now. You've had 3 weeks. What are you waiting for? But head over to Kickstarter. In fact, just head, you know, keep an eye on this page. You can go to the Nerds United Facebook page. There are links available, but you can read the Broderick preview for free, and that's half a dozen or so pages, and it really sets the tone. But you get the idea that Jack Broderick's not always a man who's going to, you know, verbalize, you know, he's not going to sit down at, you know, across the table, you know, like in The Godfather and have a big discussion. he's more of a hands-on, you know, actions speak louder than words, things like that. He's that type of character. So at those climactic scenes, you may not need that dialogue, but at the same time, when as working with Jay, you know, you're saying, hey, this is the script, this is what needs to be done, and he accommodates.
Exactly. And what's funny is even just the preview had quite a bit more dialogue in it in the original version, because it was originally a novella that I had to transpose into a comic book. And, you know, through the editing process, we just kept cutting more and more dialogue because, you know, there was so much that he can do with the art that tells the story. The dialogue just doesn't need to be there, because the reader can see it, right? Sure. Instead of just having to imagine it and it needing to be there to really set the stage. So it really works well.
And I would imagine that's one of the biggest things, and we've kind of touched on it already, but writing a novel or novella versus writing a comic, because you have the visualizations, same like, you know, and with my radio background, you know, when I was calling a football game or something like that, or I'll use baseball because baseball is a little bit slower. Oftentimes, you know, you've got to obviously give the play by play, but if it's TV, you know, and you're watching, you're in Colorado, maybe you're a Rockies fan. I don't know. if you're on TV, they don't have to focus on the pitch by pitch. They can get into stories and conversation and, oh yeah, by the way, that's a strike down the middle. And this is why I guess the good Lord graced us with five senses. When we can see things, it really cuts out I'm not saying BS as far as, you know, the words that you had planned on the Broderick novella, but it does. It cuts out a lot of the BS and you're able to get to the point quicker.
I think that's also why comic books are just so amazingly wonderful, right? Because, you know, you're seeing the entire story in the background and just looking at the way that each panel was set up and how the character changes to, you know, maybe the character gets smaller as the panels go to show that he's sort of shrinking in on himself, right? And you can do that with the visual medium instead of having to do it with only the text medium.
So I'm going to throw out a question I don't ask often enough on the show. When you are reading a comic, and it's a fair question, what do you read? I mean, do you have, you know, long boxes, short boxes, you know, shelves of trade paperbacks? I mean, do you collect and read comics?
I am really picky about the comics that I read.
Understood.
I maybe have one series going, maybe two series per year. I guess the older I get, the more and more selective that I collect, the pickier I get. Like, yeah. I'm like, okay, it needs to be exactly what I'm looking for, right? I think...
I
should read more.
And I'm not... Everybody's different, but I've realized as I get older that I go into my comic shop and I've got, you know, my titles that they've got ready for me. I'm a huge Green Lantern fan, so they've got Green Lantern, which is sad because I haven't read any Green Lantern since I haven't read any DC stuff since pre-Rebirth. So it's been a minute. But I picked up, you know, Black Bolt on Free Comic Book Day, Black Bolt number one, and I enjoyed that, so I'll continue reading that. But the question that I started to, you know, gravitate towards and then went off on a tangent was, when you're reading a comic, are you looking more at the art or are you looking more at the dialogue and the word boxes? Because for me, I got to stop myself and slow down and appreciate the art, because I grew up, I read novels, you know, I read books, and it even though I had comics, it still took me a little while to, you know, really fully appreciate them, you know. But so I've got to slow down, appreciate the art on the page, because sometimes I just want to, you know, read a comic just so that I can finish and get my three comics in a night, because I've got shelves of comics that I haven't read. Like I said, haven't touched any DC stuff since pre-Rebirth. So do you find a good blend, or because of your writing side?
Yeah, definitely not. I You know, and I think that's why I read so little. I mean, so few of them is because it takes me so long. Because I'll go through the first time, I only read the dialogue. I barely even glance at the artwork. And then I'll stop and go back and go through once and the second time and not even look at the dialogue and just look at the artwork. And then I'll read it a third time with both, you know, because that really makes me slow down and catch all the little nuances that, you know, I never caught the first few times. And so every comic, I always read it three times. It's just a personal rule.
And there's one that there's some stuff, I shouldn't say there's one, but there's some stuff that I get so caught up in the art as I'm reading it, and for whatever reason, and this is going to sound goofy, it really is, Klaus, written by Grant Morrison with art, art by Dan Mora, there's something about that, it's like a psychedelic, if you get into that first run of it, you know, the first six or seven issues that they had of it, and it looks like, you know, I've never taken psychedelic drugs. I haven't spent any time in Boulder, Colorado, so
okay.
No, I kid. But you know, it looks like, you know, what people like me, you know, squares, you know, would perceive as somebody, you know, tripping on acid or LSD. It has that, you know, bright, vibrant colors where you know, before the page before, it was, you know, much more standard black and white, or you know, just the but man, it pops, and so you're like, holy crap, let me go back a few pages, what did I miss?
Right.
You know,
yeah, me that was Michael Turner's Fathom. I didn't even look at the dialogue, like I just kept looking at all the images and those super bright colors and everything just jumping off the page. And you know, I still have those on the wall outside my office. Mm-hmm. Just because they were just that life-changing for me.
At what point did you decide? Now, goofy question. Do you have a day job?
I do. I teach at the local community college.
Okay. So, and we know that Jay also is an educator, and some of his students have been on the show here as well with their project West of Oz. In fact, I've got to get this autographed issue of, or autographed Saga Volume 1 out to Sean. Because he upped his Kickstarter support and got it to the $2,500 goal, and so he got Saga 1. I got to get that in the mail today.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah,
thanks, Sean.
Sean came through in a big way, and as soon as he it's funny because he was, I'm watching his Facebook comments and you know, teasing him along. And he says, I don't know, man. I don't know if I want to do it. I don't know. And then I put the pictures up of the book and the autograph. And he says, done.
Yeah.
So, so both you and Jay having that education background, when did you decide that this Jack Broderick character, I mean, how did he, you know, enter your brain? Where did that...
Right.
Where did that Big Bang moment happen?
Okay. I mean, it's kind of a long story, but so...
Hey, we've got time.
Oh, excellent. So in 2008, I graduated. I finished grad school, and when I was younger, I got diagnosed with Crohn's disease. And so, you know, I spent a long time, especially during my undergrad, just kind of, you know, being mad at the world and, you know, dealing with getting diagnosed with something that's, you know, kills people and, you know, something really, really horrible. And so when I finished my master's, I was like, okay, I really, really want to write a story about how people react to illness, right? And I had a couple ideas. And one of those ideas was my book that I did publish. And that's kind of the one I ran with, which was 30 Days from Sunday, which was about a kind of a college age kid, you know, very much, you know, autobiographical in it. You know, about how he dealt with illness through his geek culture and his geek friends. And then I had this other idea. I said, okay, what if I took a gangster, like an old 1940s gangster, and, you know, made him extremely ill? And if he was extremely violent, right, would he change his ways? Like, would he redeem himself by, you know, fixing things that he had done? Would he rage against all of that and just annihilate everyone around him and cause more hurt and more pain because he wanted to share that pain? And, you know, I just didn't think it worked really well as just a novel. So I took that It was a novella, and I shelved it, right? And went with my other idea. And then Jay came and, you know, he said, "Hey, man, you know, do you have any stories we could turn into a comic book?" And I told him about this novella that I had written called Nuclear, which is what I called it, which is stupid. But, you know, and he was like, "Wow." He's like, "That would make a great comic book." And the light bulb went off. And I was like, "Man, you're right. That's exactly what this needed. You know, it needs this visual medium, because on paper, I just couldn't tell the story, because you can't see the struggle of this character, right? And the grandiose violence that's going on in this world, you know, and it didn't translate well in the novel form." And so I was like, you know, "Great idea, Jay. Let's get to work on this right away." And, you know, Broderick was born.
And before we go further in with Broderick, you had posted on social media earlier this week the cover for 30 Days from Sunday. First of all, I love that cover. Tell me a little bit. I mean, who did the art for that?
Well, surprisingly enough, that's Jay.
I don't see his trademark signature anywhere in there. So
right,
he hid it.
Well, you know, I paid him for, you know, when you're when you're getting paid for the work instead of working for free, right? You don't, you know, if you're doing a book cover, you don't usually sign the book cover, right?
That's true.
So, you know, and I actually paid him, you know, don't let him tell you I didn't. And so, you know, I actually wrote him a check and also gave him a stack of books, you know, and I just, you know, I sent him the book before he did the cover, and he read through it. And, you know, he really understood what I was trying to do with it and where I was trying to go with it. And he sent me three different thumbnails, you know, just said, "Hey, what do you think of these three?" And I, you know, the one you saw that I posted on Facebook, that was the one. I was like, "Dude, perfect. That's it right there. That's John. That's the main character." So, you know, roll with it. And I said, "Hey, can you do a single color?" You know, and I said, "Definitely, you know, let's roll with blue for the first book, just because it's definitely kind of a sad story." So, you know, and, you know, that was, then the rest is history.
there's something, I mean, I don't know. I'm looking for the right word. I don't know. Poetic's not it, but there's something just like hauntingly beautiful about that cover, you know, under the street lamp, with what looks like snow. You know, I mean, it's Colorado.
Yeah. And just kind of a dirty street corner in some unnamed downtown city, right? Just walking along. And yeah, it really captures kind of the mood of the book. I mean, you know, when I wrote the book, I definitely wanted people to read it, you know, and I wanted other people who had, you know, who are struggling with the same thing that I struggled with to know that there were other people out there that were going through that and that they weren't alone. You know, and that was kind of where I was going with it. And I think the cover very much reflects that, right? Like, it's a dark time in your life, but you've got that street lamp up there, you know, and it's like, but there is some light, you know, and you can get through this. You just got to keep walking down that street kind of thing.
Quick plug for 30 Days from Sunday. Where could somebody, you know, listening to this, if they wanted to check out the book, right, where could they find that?
Amazon.
Amazon.
Jump on Amazon and type in 30 Days from Sunday. It's the first hit that comes up.
Booyah. And follow up again, and we'll talk about this in more detail at the end, but assuming you'll have some copies of it at DCC this weekend?
Yeah, we'll have a few. I'm almost sold out of the first printing. I printed 500 copies of the, you know, physical copies of the first one, and we are down to, I don't know, 6 or 8 total left.
That's not bad.
Yeah, so we've got this little stack. I'll have them there for sale, and people can come by and pick one up if they want. And, you know, we're doing the second printing. I'm going through and editing it. You know, you never catch all the mistakes. I don't know. When you read novels, you always find these little typos, and you're like, "Oh, man, they missed one," you know. And I definitely missed a few on mine, so I'm going back through and redoing it. And we're going to do an all-new coloring for the cover and then re-release it end of this year for the second printing. So
it's funny that you mentioned that. I've got a friend of mine that I've known over a decade. I mean, when I used to live out in Northwest Nebraska, you know, I knew her. I knew her brother. You know, partied with them, you know, from time to time. And she is an author as well, and has done, you know, like the young adult stuff. But before she, you know, had I don't know if I want to call it a deal, you know, a book deal or whatever. But before she, you know, got published, she used to, you know, send me the drafts, and I would proofread them and send them back. I don't, and I think now that there's probably somebody in house, you know, who does that for. But
I do the same thing. I've got a few writer friends here in town that I have a little writers group with, and we send manuscripts around. And you know, one of them who's just amazing is a writer named Kalisa Lawrence. She's going to be putting out a superhero book coming up soon, and you know, she's really good at bouncing ideas off of, you know, and just being like, hey, take a look at this script for me. And she'll tell me, okay, so this is good, but this is terrible, you know. And it's really good to have that before you get published, obviously. Well, officially published, whatever you want to call it. Right.
And I messaged her earlier this week, last week, something like that. I said, you know what, I'm happy for all your success, and I know you don't need me anymore, but I do miss receiving the advanced copies.
Yeah, like exactly.
The edit copies.
It's
copies.
Cool being part of the process, isn't
right?
It? I mean, I think so.
Let's dive back into Broderick. It's kind of why we're here again, folks. It met its initial Kickstarter campaign goal earlier this week. I think it was Monday night. Don't quote me on that, public. But we still have some stretch goals. Before we get to that, let's talk a little bit about the character, the story that we can talk about. I mean, Jay talked a little bit about it, but you know, it's your character. It's you know, your story. Jack Broderick is, as you mentioned, he's like a 40s, you know, gangster thug. You know, I guess if you put it in video game terms, he's like, you know, if there's 10 levels in the video game, I would imagine he'd be like the boss of level 9.
Right. He's an enforcer for the 1940s Chicago mob, is the idea.
Perfect way to articulate that, oh, writer. and as I mentioned with Jay, and this is, you know, again, on the free preview that you can get on Kickstarter, the copy that I had, I looked back through my files because I still have it, it's still on my desktop, but it Jay sent it to me August 30th of last year, so that's how long I've been sitting on it. So you know, Jack wakes up and he is in now Jay told me, he's like, yeah, it's an actual place, but for my purposes here, he's in a nuclear test site.
Right. It's called Trinity Nuclear Test, the Trinity Nuclear Test Site. It's the first, where the first atomic bomb was tested.
And in New Mexico, I believe.
Right. Yes, sir.
That's right. There's nothing else in New Mexico.
Oh, man.
Look at me.
Sorry, New Mexico.
They're like, we're boycotting this book.
No,
no. Here, New Mexico, I implore you, don't boycott the book. Just boycott the
podcast. Please don't. Yeah. We're sorry.
But so he wakes up. He's looking around this town. And if you've ever been, I'll use blacked out drunk. I've never been, you know, knocked unconscious and left, you know, somewhere to die. But, you know, groggy, you're not sure of your surroundings. Right. You see people, and until you kind of shake the cobwebs free, then you realize they're not actually people. They're just mannequins, and you get a phone call, a mysterious phone call with a familiar voice on the other end saying, yeah, you went too far. You pissed off the boss, whatever it was they were saying. And, oh, by the way, you're toast, Jack. And then, you know, the preview ends and you see the mushroom cloud, you know, going up. So again, talking about, you know, this character who has a choice, he can, like you said, you know, does he get vengeance? Jay put it very eloquently or very simply. He's got a choice, revenge or redemption, or, you know, one through the other. Why did you choose that setting? Why did you go 40s Chicago gangster?
I've always loved the 1940s noir, you know, the Maltese Falcon, and oh man, like all those movies just really do it for me. I like the way that they talk. I like the dialogue that they use, the terminology that they use. It's really neat seeing, you know, our country back when, I don't know, when we weren't inundated with, you know, I don't know. I guess it was modern technology then, but not what we have now, you know?
Sure.
Phones still were rotary with cords, and you know, when Jack was a kid, he, you know, cars would have just been hitting, you know, as kind of a mainstream thing, you know, and I liked the way that people dressed back then. Everyone always, everyone was dressed up for everything. You know, guys were always in suits and women were always in these just wonderful dresses. And I love the nurse uniforms. And it's just a wonderful, amazing setting to put stories into. And I always wanted to throw something in there. And, you know, I mean, if anybody who's watched Dick Tracy and all these other, you know, cool detective type stuff or read the comics, which I was a big fan of them when I was a kid, and I don't know, man. It just speaks to me, you know, and I think it works really well for trying to do something with the nuclear bomb. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you know, where it all started, basically. You know, it's like, hey, let's really play with this and let's really put some history into the comic too, so people will get to see, you know, all the streets that you see in the first issue of the comic are, you know, were real streets back then. We have pictures down these streets for Jay to kind of work off of and make sure that they look right, you know, and that everything is sort of placed where it needs to be placed. You know, all the landmarks are going to be as correct as I can make them, you know, with being a starving artist. So,
and how much research went into, you know, the locations or, you know, cause I mean, if as much as it is, you know, a revenge or redemption story, and all I've read, all anybody's read, it, you know, as far as I know, you know, aside from you and Jay, is the preview. So obviously, I don't know how the story ends, but it noir, it's a period piece. So how much research, you know, went into it, or because, I mean, it's the 40s and it's documented, like you said, in pictures and things like that. I mean, it's not like you're not calling up the 1680s or anything like that. I mean, you've got a framework to go by.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes it, you know, more challenging, because if you don't have pictures and stuff at the time, you can sort of make stuff up and get away with it. But, you know, with this piece, it was, oh man, I, you know, whatever, however many hours it took me to write the entire story, it was 10 times that in just research and sending Jay different photos of what things looked like, and both of us just sort of sitting there with all these printouts and going over, you know, what does a telephone look like and what does it feel like, and watching 1940s movies and just really trying to immerse ourselves into that time period and get it as, you know, as right as we could.
And it's funny that you went, you know, like Maltese Falcon and Dick Tracy. The when I, my go-to for, you know, 1940s, you know, or let's say, you know, mafia era Chicago is always going to be the Untouchables.
Right.
Now granted that was a little bit earlier because that was Prohibition and everything else, but
right.
I mean, but going back to what you said about it's such a wonderful time of, you know, people dressing up everywhere they went, I think of, and I know it was kind of panned, but it's, you know, an enjoyable movie for what it is, The Majestic with Jim Carrey. And, like, people go into the theater, movie theater, and they are in suits and dresses. And now, you know, like, hell, some people don't wear sleeves to the movie theater, you know, wear shoes and socks. In looking at, like, people getting, you know, boarding planes back then, and everybody's decked out to the nines, and now it's like, you know, don't wear, you know, shoes with laces because it's going to take longer through security, you know?
Right. Yeah, it was just a totally different time, you know, and now we're so inundated with everything and our days are so full of so much, and back then we, you know, things went slower, you know, life was just at a slower pace, and I think people really did stop and look around a lot more back then. And so I'm really trying to kind of capture that. You know, I mean, we have this sensationalized, you know, comic story, obviously, and, you know, the violence is going to be, it's pretty over the top, you know, but the, I think it'll work pretty well.
Ron, I get the feeling, Ron, that you kind of admire that time, and, you know, maybe if you had the choice, if you had a time machine, you'd be like, man, I'd go back to, you know, 1940s, maybe post World War II America, and just, you know, see, you know, we won the war and everybody's thrilled, and now it's time to, you know, get back to work and start building the families and things like that. I get that. I can hear it in your voice, that kind of romanticism for this period, that this love for it that you have, and so from that standpoint, I'm thrilled that you were able to you know, bring the love of this time period into a story for everybody to read.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. That's definitely what I'm going for. You know, I really want people to, if not share my love for the time period, at least find it to be fascinating, you know?
We can't give up spoilers. It's, you know, I've done episodes like night after a movie, like night after Rogue One, I did an episode. And I try to avoid spoilers. And obviously, I want people to go out and support the Kickstarter, which they can still do. Hopefully, you know, subsequent Broderick books that come down the pipe. So I don't want you to spoil anything for me at all. And so don't tell me if it's, you know, don't tell me how Jack figures things out, because I'm excited to read it. And I'm excited to, I hope I'm doing just enough teasing that everybody listens like, that son of a bitch isn't going to give me anything. I got to go buy the book. So we know that the Kickstarter has reached its initial goal. But we have, as this episode drops on June the 30th, the last day of the month, and the Kickstarter itself goes until July the 9th at midnight Eastern. What can people do if they still want to get in and help out the project? Maybe, you know, add on to the stretch goals. What else? What's the next step for Broderick, for you and Jay, as far as the next tier of funding?
Right. Well, the next funding, the next stretch goal on it is 12 extra pages in the comic book, which will be, number one, it will have making of type of stuff in there, so you'll get to see some of the storyboards and whatnot. There will be a little bit of script in there, as well as we want to put a big thank you page at the end with all of our backers. Hopefully first and last name, but if people don't want to have that on there, just first names we could throw on there or whatnot. And of course we'll contact everybody if we hit the stretch goal, which I really hope we do. And you know, really get a lot of good special features into the comic. You know, I mean, that's always the best part of buying a movie these days, right? You get the movie, but the special features are so cool, and we definitely want to add a lot of that into the comic and, you know, get even more stuff for people to enjoy. I think the next stretch goal up, well, I'm not going to tell you what the next stretch goal up is. We'll reveal it when we get there.
Well, I mean, okay, but I do have the Kickstarter page pulled up, so I could tell what it is. I can. I won't. So we're at at the top of the page. I think it says just over $2,800. That first stretch goal is $4,000. So we've got 9 days, give or take, to do it. But you also have a pretty unique opportunity here in the last week of the Kickstarter campaign. You and Jay are going to be at the Denver Comic Con, which is not your first rodeo, so to speak. Tell me a little bit about yours and Jay's history at the DCC.
Well, I joined Jay for DCC 3 years ago when he was the badge artist. You know, he did the art on all the badges that year and had a really good placement for his booth. It was right up front. And so, you know, I kind of helped him run the booth. And you know, after we were done, he was like, hey, man, you have any interest in kind of helping me out? And, you know, so for my first year, he called me his booth babe, which I thought was hilarious. And after we finished the first year, when we were doing our second DCC, I got a promotion to booth manager, which was great. And, you know, we've been going to cons. We go to cons all over Colorado and, you know, some outside of Colorado, just trying to, you know, get out there and get the word out and get Jay's, you know, art hyped up as much as possible. And now this year I'm sort of, you know, going to have my own part of it, right? So, I've got my books for sale, but more importantly, both of us are going to be behind the booth, you know, talking up Broderick and trying to, you know, having ways for people to kick right there at the booth. They can kick in cash. They can give us credit cards, you know, right there on the spot. You know, we'll get the donations in, and hopefully, you know, with the 100,000 plus people that come to Comic-Con, we can get a really, really good push here and really take this book up to the next level.
It's amazing because, like you said, 100,000 people that'll roll through DCC. And before I get to that, I got to touch back on, because you said first time it was booth babe and then booth manager. So off on a tangent, sidebar, how excited were you to trade in the swimsuit for the suit?
Oh, it was fantastic, man. I got all I really got was a title upgrade. I still have to do all the same stuff.
but you don't have to do it in a bikini anymore. So.
That's true. I don't. Yeah, I don't have to stand back there in my two-piece.
Woohoo! Oh, we're gonna. This is. I have a feeling this is gonna be the first of many conversations between myself and Iran on Nerds United. We're having a lot of fun. But going back, 100,000 people, and if you know a quarter of those stopped by your booth and gave a dollar, you know,
right?
And that's not asking a whole lot, Denver Comic Con. I think you have it in you, but you are fully. According to the Kickstarter, that would be fully funded.
Yep, that would fund the entire thing. That would fund all four issues, T-shirts, the 12 extra pages per issue. We would do a trade paperback and a hardcover collector's edition for the full four-book set. Yeah, it would be amazing, and we would be working our tails off for the next who knows how long to get that done, but we would definitely be really excited to do it.
So I'm throwing the gauntlet down, Denver Comic Con. I challenge you to stop by booth M20 and see Ron and Jay and give them a dollar.
That's it. Just a dollar. That's come it. By, give us a dollar, and we'll send you a big thank you from the Kickstarter site.
I mean, you could give more than a dollar.
You could. And then we would send you some really cool stuff, like the comic. We got prints for it. We have all kinds of fantastic stuff that you can get your hands on.
I'm thrilled. I'm truly enthusiastic to say that when the Kickstarter went live, I was the first backer. And
that's right.
I'm going to take that with me. So Denver Comic Con, hey, I don't know if DCC is going to hear about this. I think they should link it somewhere, this podcast, somewhere on their site. Even if, God forbid, they jumped into the, you know, the 50-minute mark. Denver Comic-Con goers, I'm calling you out. Help get these independent comic creators fully funded. And I'm not talking about their initial campaign funding. That's great. But I'm excited for Broderick. I want to see the full hardcover. I want to, you know, put my fat ass into a T-shirt that's going to come to my house. I want Broderick fully funded. That takes a dollar, only a dollar from 25,000 of you. And there's going to be 100,000 people passing through the door there. Go see Ron and Jay at booth M20. This weekend at the Denver Comic Con. Give them a dollar. That's really all. Yes. Give them $5 and you can get the PDF of issue one. Give them.
Even better.
I'm looking here. Give them $10 and you can get the PDF and a physical copy of Broderick issue one. Give them $15. You can get the PDF, two physical copies. That's one for you and one for a friend. For $20, you get everything that I've said. And an 11x17 sign print of Broderick's main character, Jack Broderick. I'm going down the list. For 20, there are different $20 options. The one that I just mentioned was the Demolition Man. That's Jack Broderick. There's the girl, and you get the PDF copy, the physical copy of the book, and an 11x17 sign print of the main squeeze, Nona Adani. I'm pronouncing that right, aren't I, Ron?
You got it, man. That's dead on.
For $20, you could get a PDF copy, physical copy of the book, and an 11x17 signed print of Broderick's main adversary, boss Vito Idani.
And Jay just finished the print for that, and it is amazing. We were just geeking out over it today when we were setting up our booth. You guys need to come check this print out because you can get one, and it is sweet.
I'm out of breath because I'm out of shape. So go to go to the Kickstarter. It'll be on the Nerds United Facebook page. It'll be on this post on jitterymonkey.com. Go see what the rest of these goals are. Hey, before Denver Comic Con, we're at $2,836. By Sunday night, with your help, Denver Comic Con, we could be at $28,036. I'm challenging you, Denver Comic Con. It won't take much. Spend a little time at booth M20. Get to visit with Ron and Jay. Get to hear about this project that they're so passionate about, that I'm so passionate about, and it only takes a dollar. It really only takes a dollar, and you can help make a dream come true. Ron, is there anything more that I can say about it?
You covered it all, man. Thank you so much. That was amazing.
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
Come see us, man. We really like just seeing our fans and talking with people. We'd love to hear what people think of, you know, the book, which you can see online. We'll have copies on the table. Come check us out.
That's Ron Bryce. Make sure you go check him and Jay Peter on us out. Booth M20 this weekend, Denver Comic Con. I've already exhausted, expelled all my energy, talking it up, challenging you Denver Comic Con goers. So listen to the last 5 minutes if you need a refresher. But go support independent comics. Go support Ron and Jay at Booth M20 Denver Comic Con. And hey, if you're listening to this and you're not going to be at Denver Comic Con, go to the Kickstarter page. Throw them a dollar. Throw them 5, 10, 15, 20. I threw them 36. It's my favorite two-digit number, and I was the first one. If you can challenge me, I'll shake your hand. Big shout-out to Sean for upping his support, and he will be receiving the first volume, the book one of Saga, and that was, again, signed by the Saga man himself and Brian K. Vaughn, and he'll be getting that in the mail next week. Because I still have to ship it. So I'll be shipping that tomorrow. Sean, I apologize. What can I say? It's been a hell of a week. I started a new job on Monday. I have a birthday and a Cardinal game to go to next Monday. So all kinds of crazy shit happening in my world. Ron Bryce, thank you so much, sir, for spending some time with us here on Nerds United. And hope you have a exceptionally successful Denver Comic Con.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate it.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.